Take a look behind the curtain with the real whistleblower and American Patriot. Prepare to embrace the uncomfortable truth because this program has no time for comforting lies. Here is civil liberties enthusiast, Second Amendment defender, and recovering FBI agent, Kyle Serafin.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Kyle Serafin Show. Today is Tuesday. It's December the 5th, and it is 8:30 here in Texas, America. That makes it 9:30 for you on the East Coast, and it's very early for you who are out west. We are going to be running a different format today. So we're just letting you know right now, we're running a different format. We're running a different color shirt. It's the color of rage, the color of passion. Take your pick. And we are going to be doing something that we don't normally do. We're going to be doing a short show. We're going to be breaking format for a 30-minute show today. Then we're going to cut over. And there's a second live stream. Many of you are probably confused going, what the hell's going on, Serafin? What are you got going on? We have a judiciary hearing in front of the Senate that we are going to break to at 10 Eastern in about half an hour. So we're going to jam-pack as much as we can throw at you in this 30 minutes. We're going to upload the audio for those of you who are driving around. And then we are going to be streaming live on rumble.com/KyleSerafin. And on Twitter, on Facebook, too, for some reason. I don't know why I do that, but I do. For those of you that are watching over there, come join us over on rumble.com/KyleSerafin. Give us a thumbs up if you're in the live chat and you are liking this. Let's get this thing going. And then we are going to be bringing on some of the suspendables at 10 to be able to sort of do live commentary as Christopher Wray, my former boss and the head of my ex-girlfriend agency, is going to be testifying. Now, a little bit of a spoiler. I'll give you some inside intel right before we go live with that. But let's go ahead and launch into a couple of thank yous and our sponsors real quick as we get going here. I am jazzed up. I got very little sleep, but I'm still rolling on a cup of coffee here from my Patriot Cooler. This is my Patriot Cooler. This is a 16-ounce in blue with a Suspendables merch sticker on it. You guys can always go to patriotcoolers.com. Use promo code Kyle. It'll save you 10%. $50 will get you free shipping. So easy to do and easy to find a number of things during this holiday season. You know what? Everybody gets excited about socks if you're a grown-up, especially if you were somebody who used to work on your feet, like in the infantry, or if you were a ground pounder of any kind in the military. But everybody likes to have some gadgets, some gizmos. You can check out the tumblers. You can check out their coolers. You can also check out the soft coolers, and they've even got caps. You want to click on the caps, Ryan? I've got one of those actually in my all the way to the right on there. Keep going all the way to the right. There it is. Boom. If you click on that, they've actually got some a trucker's cap, and they've got a Platinum Series Patriot Cooler hat. These are all pretty comfortable. They all say Patriot in the front. If you guys want to rep it, you can add something to your cart. Like I said, save 10% by using promo code Kyle, K-Y-L-E. Get yourself something in there. Get something for a gift, stocking stuffers, and so on. The 19-ounce tumbler is tall and skinny. It'll fit into a stocking, even a very thin stocking. So consider that. And then while we're on that, let's keep on rolling and say thanks over to Patriot, our friends at 4Patriots. That is 4Patriots.com/Kyle. 4Patriots.com/Kyle. And let's look at their best sellers. Look at what they've got right there. These are the things that they are selling best. Generators. What would you use a generator for? Well, let's say you didn't buy that 50-quart Patriot cooler like I was telling you. Then you might want to go and get yourself something you can hook up to your fridge. That's the biggest problem in power outages. If you've ever been in an area that loses power for a long period of time, you're worried about your food spoiling, and you're worried about opening and closing that fridge. Now, you can run backup power for that for a while. So check out something like a solar generator, something you can keep your appliances running. That particular one right there, the 2000X, claims to be able to run multiple different appliances. And the other thing you want is you want food, so you're not going to go hungry. You can almost always start a fire in the backyard. You can use propane and things like that, things that are disconnected from the grid. But if you can't see what the hell you're doing, you're probably going to get yourself burned, hurt, or you're going to be hiding in the dark crying like a little girl. Don't do that. Prepare. Don't repair in this case. Go to 4patriots.com/Kyle. Check out their useful products and get yourself squared away for emergencies, because we might be having some weird stuff happening. We're going to cover some of that in just a second. Let's start off with good news. Let's start off with something that is positive, because we all could use a little bit of good news in this Christmas season as we roll towards the birth of Christ, the celebration thereof. Let's talk about something related to children. That should be something near and dear to you. We had Tara Rodas and we had Aaron Stevenson on our show the other day. I wanted to give you guys the update for those of you that did not follow what was happening after you went out there. Many of you went out and you picked up and wrote down comments. You went after it with a gusto and you were filling in multiple comments. I think when we did that show, there were 22,000 comments on the federal website on the registry at that time. I got a number. I'm actually going to check my messages right now from Aaron Stevenson. He just let me know they closed last night at 11:59 Eastern Time with 66,610 comments total on that website. Many of them coming from the Truth Trench that you guys were clicking through. So good job, all of you. Good job about caring and doing something. We didn't ask a ton, but we asked you to get involved, and many of you did. And you took that upon yourself. Now, Ryan was upset that people didn't all fill out 50 or 100 comments themselves. I'll actually tell you this. Five comments times more than the number of people. It's way better to have five comments spread across thousands and thousands of people than it is to have, 70 people filling out 1,000 comments. It just turns out it's much bigger. You want more IP addresses. You want the government to be able to see that more and more people were interested in this and that it was a widespread concern. Hopefully that is the case. And I'm going to pull up this article right here, which came from, Washington Examiner. This was actually sent to me by Aaron this morning. And so let's run through what they had to say. Not only are you interested in this particular topic, but it sounds like there's additionally some senators that are saying that this is a problem. So that shows political support. It shows the people supporting, not wanting to have unvetted sponsors for immigrant children. A major, major win, a big deal. Looks like 39 GOP senators, led by Chuck Grassley, sent a letter to the HHS officials on Monday of this week, threatening to overturn the proposed rule by the Congressional Review Act. Now, as many of you guys have heard, what they have is what's called the APA. That's the Administrative Procedures Act. It allows these administrative agencies, these executive agencies, to write law. It's really a rule that masquerades as law, but Congress still does have a little bit of oversight and they can, in fact, overturn them. That's what is being suggested right here, that they can go through the Congressional Review Act, which would actually wipe out that situation and say, hey, you can't just take kids and put them with unvetted adults. They called the proposal alarming, dangerous, and potentially illegal. That is a quote from the letter that Grassley sent off. So that's all really good. They are hearing what we are saying, at least on this particular topic. So well done to all of you who got involved, who were pushing this. There was a space that was going on last night talking about the same thing, and they were pushing some last-minute comments through. I know that Tara and Aaron are both really grateful for you guys being involved. So thanks so much for doing that. And we'll continue to bring you things that you can do specifically, like action-oriented items, if you want to get involved. Not everybody does, but if you do, we're going to try to present them to you, and we'll try to present them on this show. So well done. All right. Should we talk about some other stuff? Let's talk about Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is always in threat in this country. Like, some places are passing constitutional carry. You can carry a gun without a permit because the Constitution is your permit. That's what I work with. That's what I do here in Texas. That's not the case everywhere, it turns out. That is the case in Arizona, where I was previously. But places like Illinois, which should be in the middle of America, which is mostly American property, is still dominated by the politics that happened out of the Chicago machine. And so you end up with these ridiculous, ridiculous sort of proposals to ban so-called assault weapons, which sounds like it should be coming out of a Massachusetts or should be coming out of a Washington, D.C. or a New York. Unfortunately, those of you living behind enemy lines in Illinois are dealing with this. And so you've seen sort of a swing back and forth whether or not there was going to be any injunction and any relief on the so-called assault weapons ban out of Illinois. Now, the actual law itself is referred to, let me have to look this up, it's called the Protect Illinois Communities Act, right? Because legal gun owners are obviously going to be the problem. There's ongoing casework that is going on by the Gun Owners of America, by the Firearms Policy Coalition, and by the National Association for Gun Rights, all of whom I am in contact with on at least some basis. They all kind of get back and forth with me. And this this NAGR group has actually sent me like a bunch of stickers and some T-shirts and stuff. So for whatever it's worth, there is now a request for emergency injunctive relief in front of the United States Supreme Court. It's been docketed, it's been received, and they are trying to basically stop the enforcement of this PICA Act, the Protect Illinois Communities Act, which would, like I said, effectively ban the purchase of ARs and AKs in that state. They're saying that there would be, serious harm, and so therefore this court case based on the National Association of Gun Rights is going forward and has been requested for a hearing. Amy Coney Barrett has agreed to receive a briefing on it, ordered a briefing, and so that emergency application is now in front of it. Now, there's a second thing that's going on. Basically, when you do these, they apply first in a circuit court. It has to go through the Circuit Court of Appeals once they get above that, and then once they do the Court of Appeals, there's a couple of levels. They have an individual judge that's assigned who can do a review. After that, they can have what's called a three-judge panel, and then beyond that, there's a full en banc possibility, which is to say every single judge in the appeal circuit would get out there. They would all vote and weigh in, and it's a simple majority wins or not, and then it can go and actually go to the Supreme Court. But at any moment, the Supreme Court can pick it up and say, hey, we'd like to take a look at this. So this is at least an opportunity for Amy Coney Barrett to have it in front of the SCOTUS folks to decide whether or not this is going to be Supreme Court material and whether they want to go and make a ruling on whether or not the so-called ban of assault weapons in any state, because this would go nationally if it was done by the Supreme Court, whether that is going to be something that can carry forward. It would be a strong win for the Second Amendment for them to establish that the so-called assault weapons, which many of us know are just semi-automatic rifles, AR and AK style, probably the most common rifles used for home defense and self-defense, pretty much that telltale sign. I would say that historically, hearing the pump of a 12-gauge shotgun has shut people down and made them leave your house without ever having to firing a shot. I'd say sending the bolt home on an AR or an AK, which has a very similar sound. Once you hear one of those things, I've heard them even on FISA recordings, for what it's worth. I'm not sure how much I can talk about that, but I've actually heard them over in-house microphones. And when you hear that sort of thing, you know exactly what it sounds like. And it's very clear. It's like, oh, that person has a semi-automatic rifle that just slammed a bolt home. That actually might be enough to run somebody off as well. They used to say that the 12-gauge shotgun was the most recognizable sound in the world. If you were to just play a clip anywhere in the world, all human beings knew what it sounded like. I would say that the AR and the AK in the United States are getting to be closer to that. There's enough of a familiarity with it. And using that in a home protection scenario, people always say, well, like, why do you, especially Joe Biden, like, why do you need more than 10 rounds in a magazine? Why do you need something that can do that? And the answer is because it's the best tool that's available. It's light, it's low recoil, it's safe, it's easy to operate. There are millions and millions and millions of us who have specific training, either law enforcement or in the military, and we walked out into the world, and this is something that we can use to protect our families. I don't want to tell you how many ARs I have, but that's only because I don't actually know. But I've got a bunch. I've got enough that they are in all my vehicles. They are in many rooms of my house. And it's a tool. Look, it's a tool. If you want to ban tools, you have to justify why the tool itself is dangerous. And my tools, which are locked up right across the way here, for at least a bunch of them are, they are never going to hurt anybody. They're never going to be a problem for any human being unless I make them a problem for them. They're locked safely and they're carried away. So be responsible gun owners. Follow these cases. There's a bunch of them. If you guys want to get involved, my favorite two organizations I'm actually not as familiar with, and I'm not, my buddies who work for Firearms Policy Coalition do not love these guys. They said a National Association for Gun Rights is not their favorite. Their favorite is either Firearms Policy Coalition. You've probably seen them. They have that sort of go F yourself sort of attitude like Elon Musk does. They put a lot of profanity out on social media. And then the other one is Gun Owners of America, and they tend to be a little bit more dignified about it. My buddy Steven, who's been on the show, works for them on a contract basis, and that's who he kind of puts his money behind. So both of those, all three of them are good organizations, and all of them are options that you can be a part of. And in doing so, you will be funding the defenses in this sort of lawfare. We keep seeing Democrat states and cities and municipalities pushing against the Second Amendment, things that were mentioned here by our buddy Tack P, saying that they are repugnant to the Constitution. There literally is no justification for infringing on any rights. So, yeah, let's just pull it up real quick. He says all laws that are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Madison versus Marbury, this is the case law. Our courts are lawless to allow this. I tend to agree. I'm a Second Amendment absolutist. That means that I am a ATF abolitionist. And in the same way, you guys probably know, I'm not a big fan of the FBI either at this point. If they're not going to get rid of the domestic intel mission, they should get rid of the whole damn thing. We'll talk about that more on the live stream. I'm sure we'll have unlimited examples of stupidity. But let's keep pushing forward, okay? We've got a short show, so we're going to cram it all in there as best as possible. Speaking of the FBI, my ex-girlfriend, she's made some news again with a great headline. It looks good. It sounds good. Let's dig into a little bit from CNN. Here we go. This is Las Vegas teen found with explosives material after threatening to do a quote-unquote lone wolf terror attack, authorities say. Now, this is a couple days old at this point. I've been kind of watching it to see if it's showed up. They haven't put it out there in any strong thing. And the real problem for me is they didn't release the kid's name. That's probably because he's 16 years old. But because they didn't release the name, I have not been able to see the affidavit that was going to swear and attest to whatever the facts were regarding the search warrant they did. But let's read the story. Here it is. 16-year-old boy in Las Vegas. Actually, they don't even say boy, but we have to assume. Oh, there, they say it later on. was arrested for allegedly threatening to do lone wolf terrorist attack in support of ISIS. Okay, well, that's a hot take. Adding that investigators found components and instructions to build explosive devices in a search of his home. So what did they find? The anarchist cookbook? Did they find some baking soda and some bleach and some ammonia? You know, like some basic household detergents. Quick little story, Ryan. We can go full screen with this one. A little funny story, which my father, who will probably listen to this, will remember. When I was maybe 12 or 13 years old, I got really into doing model rockets. So some of you guys have seen these things. You can go buy them. You used to be able to buy them in the like the hobby stores. You could go and buy a hobby rocket. They had a little electronic ignition. They had a clay-based nose cone. And it was essentially a firework that would just send a flaming jet out the bottom, and it would shoot this thing up into the air. And you had different classes of engines. The A engines were a little tiny. They were like, you know, triple A's. And then you had the B engines, and they were the size of like a double A. And you had the C engines, and they were somewhat bigger, and the D engines. So they had different sort of class of engines and power. And you could fire those suckers off into the world, and they would fly up in the air. And then they had a last little burst on the end of the of all these little engines. They would fire one forward, and that would burst out a nose cone, and the nose cone would explode out, and you'd have a little parachute that would go, and then they would fly down to the earth, and then you go collect them. So you'd go out to big soccer fields where they had like a dozen soccer fields. We used to live in outside of Dallas, Texas, so there was a lot of open ground. We'd fly those things off, and they'd inevitably get caught in the wind. They go fly into a tree or whatever. So all that's really fun. It's really fun. But you know, I was a pretty red-blooded male, young teenage, soon-to-be teenage kid. So one of the things that I would do is that my brothers and I would concoct our own rockets. We would find out the size of the cone. We would base that for what we needed to be able to put an engine in. And then we would go get a PVC pipe, and we would cut it, and then we would open it up and put some sort of explosive payload. You know, I put explosive because that's what we thought would happen. This is all like pre-internet society where nobody knew what the hell was going on. So you'd hear something from your friends. Oh, if you pour like a bunch of bleach and then put a bunch of, you know, paper towels that have ammonia on it, it'll make a hydrogen gas. And then you can, okay. So that was the idea. So we would go and set these suckers up. I made one that had a stick that I had not only taken a belt sander and honed it into a spike, but then I had flame hardened it for some reason because I thought that was cool. And then I went and I loaded this whole sucker up. I shot this thing off the back of my balcony when we lived out in Coppell, Texas. And I fired that thing up, and it was the biggest engine I could get. It was probably an E-class engine, and it went 1,000 feet in the air or more. I mean, it was awesome. Then it exploded, which was awesome. We saw a fireball. So actually my explosive materials worked. The propellant that was supposed to send out the thing that was supposed to discharge the parachute actually just ignited my little ball of flames or whatever that I had building up inside of there, or the gas bubble. So that exploded. And then my sharp spike went and stuck itself in the ground from 1,000 feet up. It came down like a rocket and stuck into the ground, went through about 6 inches of gravel on the side of the road. And for me, the moment of joy came when the bomb squad pulled up outside of my house, because they were able to trace the trajectory of likely houses that it could have been sent from, and we were the most likely. So sure enough, I get a call from my dad, who's downstairs, and it's like, we were already building the next one, man. We were ready to go and do the next explosive. And they called us out there, and they had the damn thing in like a box, and they were like looking at it, and they're pointing at it and stuff, and they're trying to ascertain, you know, were the Russians attacking us? Was this the moment, you know, that it was coming down to? Anyhow, long and short of it was, I caught like a verbal correction, and I had to readjust my posture. I no longer built model rockets and fired them off at cars. Little did I know that the forest behind me, I didn't have a good map study at the time, but the forest behind me had a road that cut through it, which was a beltline road. For those of you who know the area in Dallas, that's what happened. So long short, that's kind of what boys do, build these things. Generally speaking, though, not with an ISIS flag, so that's sort of the differentiator here. And of course, we didn't have the internet back then, so you could get into a lot less trouble, it turns out. Let's go back to the article here. The Las Vegas Metropolitan PD said they started investigating last week. So this is not a long-term investigation. After an online threatening post of lone wolf operations in Las Vegas against the quote-unquote enemies of Allah. This guy was trying to be an Aloha snack bar type. That's an interesting thing to do. The person who made the post cited their support for the Islamic State, and then so they got the JTTF involved. Those guys got a big terrorist boner. I'm sure they tried to do an online UCE. Within a couple hours, they identified the boy, and then they got a search warrant for his home. That will be very interesting to see what the PC was, because saying that you love the Islamic State has never generated a search warrant in any of the cases that I've worked on, including guys who have gone out there that have bought weapons, have said they were going to support the Islamic State, and would go and do like any number of videos and things like this in support of these terrorist ideologies. So that's usually not enough. But they said they found numerous items of concern, including terrorism propaganda. Turns out that's illegal to own. I don't know what they think they're going to do with that, that indicated his intent to commit an act of terrorism. Or it indicated he was a 16-year-old boy that was just a jerk. Real possibilities. So we have to keep watching this thing and see whether or not they tried to instigate if they put in an online undercover or a real undercover to meet up with this kid, because that seems to be the thing that I've seen them do most frequently. Long and short of it is, they found a handmade ISIS flag. Here's the real incriminating stuff. Al-Qaeda and ISIS propaganda and guidance on how to conduct a terrorist attack, as well as components, recipes, and instructions for how to build an explosive device. I am very, very interested in knowing what these components are. If any of you lived through the 80s and the 90s, you remember there used to be a place called Radio Shack, which was essentially a build-a-bomb workshop. You could walk in there and create ignitiators. You could do remote timers. You could do any of the things you might ever want to do. You also could build computers. You could build your own circuit boards. You could build a do-it-yourself radio. So what they consider to be components and recipes and instructions, the idea of constructive intent is something the ATF leans on very, very heavily, and I'm always very, very uncomfortable with the idea of it. If you're not familiar with constructive intent, essentially what they say is that you have the items that can build a thing, whether it be a suppressor or a weapon system or an explosive device, and by owning mere items and the idea that you thought about doing something with them, that is the way that they are going to justify coming after you. They're saying that you having them is your intent to construct them. I think that means they are doing mind reading. That is pre-crime. That is the thing that we argue against with the suspendables. Nobody wants to see that. The precogs don't do a really good job over at the FBI. They actually don't know what the hell they're talking about. All right, let's dig in this last little piece here because we are going to break away for this hearing in just a moment. But before we do, let's go to the topic at hand. The question is this. We are seeing many, many military age men creeping into this country. It doesn't matter where they're from. Ryan took some great footage of it when he was down in Eagle Pass around in Texas, watching these people come in from Mexico. They are coming in from many different nationalities. It doesn't matter whether they are coming in from China, whether they're coming in from India, whether they're coming in from Africa, or they're coming in from Central America. We're seeing all kinds of horrific things, including that child trafficking. So the question is this, is there a plan? Is there a goal? Or are we simply just seeing chaos and failure, that the chaos is the plan? And we don't really know, but this seems like Dick Durbin, who's going to be involved in this committee coming up shortly, may have let the plan slip in the last 48 hours. Let's listen to what he has to say. We'll do a quick commentary on it. We're going to go to the Selective Service website and see if what he's saying makes any sense whatsoever. And then we're going to break away. So we appreciate your attention. Let's rock and roll to video number one. Take a look at this, folks, and let's see what we make of it.
What troubles me about the debate now about the southern border is it is one half of the immigration equation. Yes, we need order at the border. Yes, we need to have changes in the laws that reflect the reality of the overwhelming numbers from all over the world who are coming to our shores and our border. But there's also an incredible demand for legal immigration into this country even now. The presiding officer, my colleague from the state of Illinois, has legislation which addresses one aspect of that. Her bill, and I hope I describe it accurately, says that if you're an undocumented person in this country and you can pass the physical and the required test, background test, the like, you can serve in our military, and if you do it honorably, we will make you citizens of the United States. Do we need that? Do you know what the recruiting numbers are at the Army and the Navy and the Air Force? They can't reach their quotas each month. They can't find enough people to join our military forces. And there are those who are undocumented who want the chance to serve and risk their lives for this country. Should we give them the chance? I think we should. Let me tell you about.
I think we should. I'm taking a deep breath here. Unbelievable. So let's go. So Kim Wexler, who is in our chat right now and has been on Twitter looking at some of this stuff, kind of tagged me in something that made me start thinking, is that even an opportunity? Is that even real? And so the first question would be, yes, they're talking about passing an actual law that would allow them to come into it. But more importantly, the question is there any precedence for that? How do we look at people that are in this country illegally? And Kim brought up the question of selective service and tagged something right out of the website. We're going to do some of that right here. So the question is this. Who needs to register for selective service? What is the selective service? Many of you may not be familiar with it, especially if you're a female and you don't realize. When I was 18 years old, I was made aware that I had to register for the selective service. In fact, I think that was the first thing I did on the internet that was of any kind of government substance. You log in. And you give them your information and you tell them, here's who I am. Here's what my Social Security is. I am officially telling you that I have registered for Selective Service, which is the service that the government would go to if and only if they were to institute a draft, a non-selective war. If they started conscripting soldiers and airmen and Marines and sailors, then they would go to the Selective Service System. They would pull all the names out of that hat, and they would start dragging out the young men between the ages of 18 and 25, and maybe a little bit older than that. But that's the time frame you have to register. And they would go and send them a notice of what their draft card number is. This is what happened in Vietnam. This is how they had a conscripted army. So the question is who is required to register? Now, at 18, I remember registering. They sent me all my information. You put it all in there, your address, your name, and all this stuff. And then I got in the mail, congratulations for registering for the draft, and here is a Gillette razor. Like, I had that forever. I had this damn Mach 3 that I got from there. I may still have it, to be honest with you. I'm that kind of guy. I actually hold on to things forever. And they sent me a razor. Strangely, but that's what they did. Now we're going to look into who needs to register for this draft. So this is kind of the funniest thing. If you go to the webpage, they actually have a whole list. Who needs to register? I'm morally opposed to war. Do I need to register? The answer is yes. Nobody cares. You can put in a conscientious objection later. My most interested one, the second question behind I'm morally opposed to war, is I'm a transgender non-binary person. Am I required to? And guess what? The government is going to discriminate against your gender identity. They do not give two SHITs. What do they say? You have to use the gender that is assigned at birth, not your gender identity, or not on gender reassignment. Individuals who were born as males, changed their gender to female, they're still required to register. You know why? Because war doesn't care about your feelings, the facts don't care about your feelings, and the reality of your biology does not care about your feelings. If you think you can run as fast as a dude in a woman's track meet, you still have to register under the Selective Service. The law has not been adapted. And so you should know the Selective Service is transphobic. Obviously, if you're disabled, they say yes, in most cases, you're still going to have to do it. I'm just kind of working through here. If you're a member of the clergy, you do not. Isn't that what it says? No, they're not. They still have to. Members of the clergy, everybody has to register. That's the whole thing. And are undocumented males required to register? And the answer is yes. So what it says is almost all males are. And then, Ryan, we've actually have the text that I'm going to read right off the screen that you put up here. This is for immigrants and dual nationals, including illegals. Are you guys ready for this? U.S. immigrants are required by law to register for the Selective Service System 30 days after their 18th birthday or 30 days after entry into the United States if they are between the ages of 18 and 25. This includes U.S.-born and naturalized citizens. Parolees, which are people that have been let here by the State Department, it's similar to a asylum type, but this is more like what we saw from Afghanistan. They were parolees. They were allowed into this country. They had a status to be able to come here, and they're able to work. So they also, our Afghans, have to actually sign up for this stuff, which is pretty wild. Undocumented immigrants, legal permanent residents, that's your green card holders, people who are seeking asylum, and refugees, all males with a visa of any kinds that have expired. If you are a visa overstay, you actually legally have to do so on penalty of felony. The only people that do not are those who are on a current non-immigrant visa, as long as they keep their visa eligible. If you're here on a work permit that allows you, like a category B is my understanding, if you came here to work and you plan on leaving, then that is what they're going to do. Now, I'm just seeing MacBuddy in our chat is asking, how do they vet these people coming in when they can get rid of their documents prior to coming in? Yeah, they can't vet them. And so what's very interesting about all of this stuff, most conscripted people are probably not going to be put into a position of trust. They're not going to be getting a security clearance, but it's worth knowing they have to register. That's what our law says. And so that allows us at least the gateway into making a fully illegal immigrant army. That's a possibility that could be. And like I said, this is sort of the template they would look at. These are the people that are required to register for Selective Service. And if they were to go and conscript them, it's a real possibility they could do something with these people. Very strange for most of us to think about. But as somebody mentioned on Twitter earlier today, am I the only one who's seen this hacked? We start a foreign war, which we seem so apt to do, and they seem so interested in doing under Biden. And then, what if you just left them there? I'm just saying, if people want to come and serve our country and they want to do so honorably, I don't have a problem with them being part of America. That actually has always been a way to get to the front of the line. You could actually always come here, not as an illegal, but you could come here and apply for citizenship after military service. Many people do. Many of us who have served know people that did that. They're less and less in the Air Force. They're more in the Army. Some of them are in the Marine Corps. But it turns out You can actually come here as a non-U.S. citizen and become a citizen through military service. Very Starship Troopers-like. I don't hate that idea. I don't hate the idea of us doing that, but I think it needs to be under some pretty tight parameters, and we need to not be giving away our national security secrets to these folks. So that is our show today, folks. We came in hard and fast for 30 minutes. We're going to be turning around and lighting it up with Real Steve Friend and Ryan Matta on this weaponization, this Judiciary Committee, this oversight hearing with Chris Wray. Little spoiler alert, I gave them some information. I've been on the phone with a member of one of the senator's offices who's doing some questions, and they've got some hot grenades to throw. So we'll be interested in seeing that. Let's do a five-star review real quick and let's roll this thing out. We do appreciate you guys supporting our show, including the five-star reviews on Apple. So go on there and leave one. This is from Herecticus. Says the Kyle Serafin Show. Kyle provides deep dives into the failings of our Justice Department and FBI. His sometimes dry humor takes the edge off what would be otherwise disconcerting topics. Along with fellow suspendables, he brings corruption to light that was previously thought could only suspect was happening. Given my busy schedule, I always make time to watch the Kyle Serafin Show. We very much appreciate you watching it. Folks, share it, like it, subscribe. If you want to join and support our channel, you can actually do so on rumble.com/Kyle Serafin. You can hit follow and then hit subscribe if you want. It's like $5 a month. You're just supporting what we're doing here, and we really appreciate it. Follow at Ryan Matta Media on Twitter or Ryan Matta over on True Social. We will see you again tomorrow with a full show, and join us in the live stream as we break down. We'll have a little bit more time to relax. We will do a live stream of this Senate hearing coming up on this channel. Again, rumble.com/Kyle Serafin. It'll be streaming live on Twitter as well. Kaboom. We are out. God bless all of you guys. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Kyle Serafin Show, streamed live weekdays on rumble.com/Kyle Serafin. Follow Kyle on Twitter, Truth Social, and Instagram at Kyle Serafin.